Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
Speaking of David Norton Owl and Maui stuff, did you see I did a live stream with them last week?
Well, yes, because you asked us to watch it.
Did I?
But it was at stupid o'clock in the morning, which was actually not long before I was going out for a run. So
you could have didn't get a chance. Just like tuned in on your run and listened to it.
Yeah, well, that would have, I had people with me, so that would have been very antisocial.
It would have, it would have been very rude not to share it with them as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know how Absolutely. We hit record just before I said that?
Yeah.
In the spirit of no context segues, I was listening to last week's episode and I realized there was a segue I made where I talked about lithium, about how my bike doesn't have lithium problems.
Yep.
And I realized we cut the whole section, the whole discussion about lithium. So that probably doesn't make any sense to anyone.
That's fine.
And let's leave it at that and never speak of it again.
Yeah, that's it. Actually, there is a good segue.
Right.
The first company, second company I ever worked for, like full time, second company, name of that company was Lithium Corp.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. How's that for a segue? And do you know why that is relevant?
No, please tell me. No. Please enlighten me.
So that was in 2005. I started there. And
that was, wow, 2005.
Yeah.
So you've been working.
Shut up. Yeah.
So your age must be.
Look, I'll just give you my date of birth and my mother's maiden name too, if you want.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was 2005.
Name of your childhood pet?
Sorry? name of my first pet?
Name of your childhood pet, yeah.
So 2005. Bear with me. This is all on track. The owner of that business, he was a mate of mine. So it was just me, myself, and we had another guy there. And then it was just the two of us. But what we were building and what my boss, who, like I said, he was a mate, really super smart guy, network monitoring software. So he was actually, you know, the world of Cisco, right? He was one of the youngest CCIE, Cisco certified inter networking engineers, I think.
Inter networking expert, yeah.
Inter networking expert, and he was super young when he did that. So he starts this organization, builds out for the Catholic school system, their intranet, basically. And we were monitoring that network that he'd built out. So he's built this monitoring software and he comes from a Mac background. He loves his Macs. He actually went on to work for Apple at one point, but loves his Macs. And he built this monitoring software and it looked friggin' awesome on the Macs of the day, 2005. Okay?
Yep.
Now, bear with me. This is a long-winded way to get to make this segue. Then I started working with him and we decided we needed a Windows client, not just a Mac client, but a Windows client too. 2005.
Yeah.
Best we could do was a butt ugly Battleship Gray WinForms app.
Sounds classic, yeah.
Right. So on one hand, he was, and we're trying to, you know, trying to sell this network monitoring tool, monitoring all the servers, the X servers, all the switches, everything.
Xserve, haven't heard that in a while.
Oh, yeah. So we'll come back to that. So monitoring
all this is like a SNMP system?
Yep. Yeah. But he actually figured out how to get into the Xserve's, I can't remember, through the interface, but actually pulling data that couldn't get via SNMP. Yep, he was getting extra shit out of this thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, the application looked great on the Mac, you know, curved, rounded borders, gradients, nice user interface. And he built that one up from the ground up. And then I came along and we built the butt ugly WinForms version.
Yeah.
Right. Now, not long after 2005, not long after that, Microsoft had a promising new technology that they wanted to release.
Yeah.
Codenamed Avalon.
Right.
Right. So that was, according to my docs here, announced 2003.
I'm trying to think, what came out that long ago? And I'm thinking, wow, it was a long time ago. I don't know, the Bible?
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Avalon, huh? Yeah.
Avalon. So, Avalon
sensing an interesting bit of history here that's going to connect to something, but I'm excited.
So I'm finishing, this is where we finish the segue. This is coming up to the conclusion of the segue. So Avalon was the code name for WPF.
Yeah.
Right? That they announced, that was launched in 2006.
Yeah.
So prior to it launching, we made the decision to start building a brand new Windows application based on this upcoming WPF, promised WPF Avalon interface.
That's cool. Yeah.
So one, showing my age, two, closing off this entire segue that started with you mentioning Lithium and me making that segue all the way through to saying that I want to talk about WPF.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
So usually you're the one that's doing those segues, and I don't know if mine's as polished as yours usually are. But
I don't know. I'm usually quite rambling. Maybe not with the segues, but that was good. Yeah. I liked it. Yeah.
And for all the listeners, Matt knew what the topic was, but did not know that that was going to be the segue.
No, I did not know.
When you threw Lithium out there, I thought, hang on, now I've just got to jump onto that one.
Yeah. So, excellent.
Look, we've had actually good feedback and good metrics on a couple of topics, a couple of episodes that you have done where you've shared us with your passion and your knowledge and your history of certain technologies.
Yeah.
So we were talking the other day and thought, well, hey, maybe it's my turn to see if I can do it any justice.
Absolutely. And we have both said many times across many episodes that we both have quite a fondness for WPF.
Absolutely. I love it. I think as a desktop technology, I think it's great. I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
And to go back to that segue, when we saw the demos that Microsoft were producing using WPF, and I don't know if you can remember them, but they had like this 3D carousel that would spin around. I think it was a video library or something. It was like a 3D carousel. The wall would spin around and you'd zoom in.
I remember
in
the 3D carousel. I don't remember it being a video library.
Oh, I can't remember. It might not have been videos. It might have been images. I can't remember exactly. But I just remember the animations, the gradients, the transparencies, and thinking we had a good application in Mac that we could not replicate in Windows.
Yeah.
But the technology was coming.
So you've just said something that's triggered some memories here. So 2006.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. They're not traumatic memories. So, well, actually, yeah, they are, right? So 2006.
Yep.
Transparency. I'm thinking Vista, Aero Glass.
Mm-hmm.
Was that part of the launch lineup?
Yes. So I have to look at my notes here. But yeah, yeah. So WPF was, I believe, was released with Vista.
There you go.
So Vista's consumer launch, according to these docs I've got here, 2007. So yes, around that time.
Yeah.
So I think that's right now that I'm thinking about it. So WPF was launched inside, you could install it in XP.
Yeah.
But it was part of Vista, yes.
It was built in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. And just take a step back a second. So just set the scene for me a bit more. What technology was used to build the desktop UI on macOS, do you know? Or you didn't really care?
I don't really care.
Yeah.
No, that predated, what is it now, Swift? Is that what they use? I don't know.
Yeah. So before Swift, there was Objective-C.
It was Objective-C.
Yeah.
It was. And, you know, I just couldn't get my head around it. And like, this was early in my career, so I was not by no means a professional .NET developer.
Right.
But I just couldn't get my head around Objective-C as easily as I could around C#.
Right.
Interestingly. But so to, just to take a step back, right? If we really want to go back to pre-WPF.
Prehistoric. Yeah.
Prehistoric. If you recall, like, what was it? Windows 95, Windows 2000.
Windows XP, ME. Yeah.
Windows ME, Windows XP. But even Windows 3.1, right?
Yeah.
The applications all pretty much looked the same.
Okay.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, these docs that I've got here, the research that I've done for this, you know, we predate all of that back to 1985, if we really want to go that far back. And that's back to the GDI, the graphics device interface days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like going way back. But back then, what we're talking about there is the controls that we're putting on the screen and could only, sorry, every pixel on screen could only be owned by one control. So we can't do any overlaps. There's no need to transparencies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
Right. So a text box sits on a text in tape. The pixels allocated to that text box are given to that text box.
Yeah.
And the buttons are there.
Right.
But, you know, not long after, I'm trying to sort of gloss over a lot of this because this was way back when it was quite difficult to actually get these controls on screen. 92, Microsoft released the MFC, which is your wrapper around the C API calls, the wrap around those calls to get the graphics on screen.
Yeah.
Make it a bit more user friendly, but still not great. But not long after, and actually this is an aside, even going way back before my start as a professional developer, I remember being in high school year 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And one of my mates is like showing me, I don't know where he got it from, Visual Basic.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to drag and drop and build up these form UIs.
Yeah.
And drag and drop and make them look like every other application out there.
Yeah.
And I remember he was blown away by this too. He was like, wow, look what we can do.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, because I'm not a professional developer. I don't care about forms. I'm like, so? Like, it's not that interesting.
Yeah.
They're just boxes and buttons. And wow, I can put a click handler and it react to a button being done. And, you know, I was not taken by it like he was.
Yeah.
So that's sort of where VB comes in, Visual Basic, to help plot all this out.
Yeah.
But really, I think UI in Windows really kicks off with WinForms for me.
Yeah.
And that's where we get that traditional, what we, you know, loosely term the battleship gray, sort of that VB, VB6, sort of VB kind of interface, drag and drop.
Yeah. So from from my perspective, when I first saw that, I was also blown away. And I also wasn't a professional developer, but I had done some dabbling in coding. And I've said this before, there was no concept of a UI library. If you wanted a button on screen, you drew the pixels of, you know, you drew two white lines for the top and left and two black lines for the bottom and right. And, you know, you, when there was a mouse click event on screen, you looked at the coordinates, and if it was inside the coordinates of your button, that was a click. And, you know, you inverted the black and white lines to get that depressed effect of them back for the embossed effect. And like, that was my experience of building UIs, was it was like you drew the controls on screen and you tracked mouse clicks. And So when I saw that kind of drag and drop UI, I was blown away. I thought it was, and especially like, you know, event handlers, like the concept of event handlers was amazing to me, because everything that I'd done, there was a loop, and then once per loop, you evaluated everything. Yes. And so, yeah, that was all pretty impressive.
I do remember that, because again, back at school, you know, we were doing Pascal.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything's very procedural.
Yeah.
Top to bottom, follow the procedures through. And I do remember seeing the event-driven side and thinking that's pretty cool, but I still wasn't taken by it. It just wasn't really.
So I have a question for you. So you said that for you, it kicks off with WinForms. Now, was WinForms not that technology that was baked into? Right.
Okay. It was, but this is now in my head and in my my personal history is where I do start entering that professional workforce.
Yeah.
And I moved away from just doing something for fun and games. And I have a reason to show data on screen. I have a reason to take input from the user.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to, mucking around and making games or tweaking games or whatever you were doing back in the day in QBasic when I was giving myself infinite lives in Snake or whatever else.
Yeah.
You know, that was one thing, but getting into the workforce and actually having to do something of value in that respect, yes, WinForms was my real introduction in that space.
Yeah.
And like we said, it's event driven.
Yeah.
Each form has a code behind file.
Yeah.
And when you click a button, you can handle that click handler.
Yeah.
I mean, you can react, and you can react to the events that are happening on that form, so to speak.
Yeah.
But we still didn't have control, or we didn't have easy control over the look and the feel of the applications and of those text boxes and the buttons and all the controls for the way that form was on screen.
And that form, when you drag and drop and design it, how is that saved, that information about your layout and your design?
How's it saved? Gosh, you're really pushing my memory here. It's okay. So from memory too, like it was a WYSIWYG editor.
Yeah.
Right. And yes, you were dragging and dropping. I mean, it was obviously saved in some data structure, but I honestly don't recall tweaking any of that or manipulating that data structure. You were physically moving the boxes around on the grid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which actually, that's a really good point, because, and I want to come back to that with some of the parts I do enjoy about WPF and a few other little bugbears, but right, it was a WYSIWYG editor that, yes, you move the box in and you align things, and it did what it wanted to, like it did what it needed
to
do.
I guess like it was a simpler time as well, right? Like you could pretty much guarantee that your users would be running 640 by 480 VGA resolution, right?
Absolutely. And again, you could almost be guaranteed that your users were going to be in an enterprise and they don't care about how pretty things are. They just want to enter data as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And do what they need to as quickly
as
possible.
They probably want it, you know, it's probably already prettier than their green screen terminal emulator, so they're happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, you're right. It was an easier time and a simpler time. And, you know, most of the time you're just saving it to a local database somewhere. Like it's might not have a lot of users on the system. So there's, for lack of a better term, it is a simpler time.
Yeah.
So like I said, WinForms really wasn't a great experience if you wanted to go off the beaten track.
Yeah.
You're pretty much stuck doing it exactly how Microsoft wanted you to render your controls on screen.
Right. So it's, like you said, it's called WinForms. So it's forms.
Forms, correct.
Buttons, and text entries, like...
Yeah, and radio and buttons, checkboxes, lists,
yeah.
Right?
But if again, you're writing like, a network monitoring tool, you probably want live updating
graphs,
charts, right?
You want charts, you want graphs, you want different interactions.
Yeah.
So, like I said, when we see the announcement of what is promised with WPF, this was before it was released, so we're in early beta stage. I was given the go-ahead to build V2 of our Windows application. And lo and behold, I was able to replicate what we had in the Mac world inside WPF quite relatively easily. It, you know, still took a bit of work, but it wasn't too bad. And I've actually reached out to my boss to see if he's got any, my old boss, to see if he's got any screenshots that I can just reference, because my brain is not that, my memory's not as good as it used to be.
Right.
But we took it one step further. We took it even further than that. I remember I was rendering the XServe from a top-down view, and I can't recall now, and I really want to, this is why I want the screenshots, is if we were rendering a vector image of what it would look like from top-down, or if it was just a screen, like a photo that we're rendering. But what I was able to do was actually put the metrics for each component over the actual component on screen.
That's flash. That's very cool.
It was awesome. And, you know, with the 3D, with the transparencies and whatnot, so you could see where the fans were and the speed and the temperatures at the fans, what the hard drives were doing, what the CPU temperatures were, what the RAM, and everything was where it was meant to be.
Mm.
We didn't do that in the Mac version. We were able to achieve that in the WPF world.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that was friggin' awesome. And I'm hoping that he can get me those screenshots, because I really want to see those. And I guess...
Is that product still around?
No. Not that I'm aware of. So, like I said, he moved on, closed up, finished up that business and moved on to Apple.
Mm.
But where this goes now with WPF, right? This was also, as I said, early in my career, I was not too familiar with design patterns too much.
Yeah.
Right. In Objective-C, I think they were using MVP, Model View Presenter.
Yeah.
I think, I can't recall exactly. And actually, interestingly, so after WPF was actually released and we were playing around with it and getting it really working well, I moved on to another job.
Yeah.
Now that job, that role, and I've moved on to a few roles in my career, so don't be too surprised if we do jump around a bit. But that next role, we were building another tool. I can't remember now. This was in the networking space again.
Mm.
And we were starting to use out of the Microsoft Patents and Practices Department, or Patents and Practices. So if you recall back in the day, Microsoft would have prescribed patents and practices for how to do certain things, right? This was well before Stack Overflow, obviously well before we could ask Claude to do anything for us.
Yeah.
They had their patents and practices. And out of that, they shipped what they called the Smart Client Software Factory, maybe? I can't remember the terms exactly now. I'll have to find that one out. And in that, that's where they introduced dependency injection, inversion of control.
Yeah.
As part of their patents, they had their own container. And back in the day, that was called Unity, if you recall.
Yeah.
So that's where they created their own container. And we were building, in this job, we were building what's called a smart client. So basically a desktop application connected up to the server, like the in-house server or the on-prem server usually. But what made the client smart was the way that we could, I guess, configure its look and feel, or not just the look and feel, sorry, but configure its capability based on the user's login, based on what was available, what DLLs were even loaded. Because now we're using these fancy new tools like dependency injection.
Mm.
And at startup time, let's just check what DLLs are around. And if there's the appropriate libraries in place, we can look for the appropriate interfaces and drag in those controls and start rendering them on screen as needed, which is a pretty cool tool there.
Mm.
Now, in that space, I also racking my brain here, but I'm pretty sure we were starting to use the MVC pattern, model view controller pattern.
In your desktop UI?
Correct.
Right, okay.
I'm pretty sure it was. It could have been MVP, one of the two. To be honest, I was struggling to get my head around, and I still kind of do, the difference between them. But again, I think that was that could have been a WinForms app too. But then we progressed that app to a point where we started using WPF now.
Mm.
And again, I was doing some cool shit there. And again, we were monitoring network switches. So I rendered up a network switch of whatever it was, 24 ports or 36 ports or whatever.
Yeah.
And I had the lights for every single port going.
Yeah.
So that when you looked at the screen, you could see exactly what each port was doing.
Yeah.
Based on what it would look like if the switch was right in front of you.
So that's cool. Very cool.
And again, like that kind of shit you just couldn't do pre-WPF days.
Well, not with native Microsoft technology.
No. And so on that, where that brings me now is one of the fundamental things that WPF brought to the table that was lacking any time before that was the separation of behavior and look.
Yeah.
Right. So they introduced this idea, this concept of control templates.
Yeah.
And so if I created a control, I can define the behavior of my control. My button has a click behavior. Text box has, you know, data entry behavior, focus behavior, et cetera, et cetera. But the look of that button is not defined and does not have to be defined when I create that control.
Mm.
And so by separating them now, the world's your oyster, right? Now, if I want all buttons in my application to be circular, well, I just need to change that control template and all buttons will be the same.
Yeah.
And this was pretty much groundbreaking for me. Like it was just mind-blowing in that space that, yes, I can now have that separation of concerns.
Mm.
And so, like when I'm rendering out these network switches or the server, realistically, yes, my look and feel is completely different to the behavior that you're doing. And so we start to get that separation.
Mm.
Now, on top of that, WPF also introduced data templates, which is the next level. So I've got my control looks like one thing, but what does data actually look like? And this was also quite a pivotal thing for me because that's when you start tying in with MVVM. And when MVVM is introduced, right? Model, view model.
Yeah.
And if we look at our view model now as being just data, just state, the state of what we want to render on screen.
So you've thrown a lot of letters around here, right? MVC, MVP, MVVM. Yep. What do all these things mean?
Well, the M generally means model.
Right. Yeah.
Across the board.
Yep.
The V is your view.
Yeah.
And the C, the P, or the VM is controller, presenter, or view model. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the beginning. The model. That's what we're trying to represent. Like that's the data that we're looking at.
Yeah.
Right. If it's a form, that's the model of that form that we're trying to capture or render on screen.
Yeah.
The view is what we can see.
Yeah.
And then the view or the controller, the presenter, basically there, how do we connect the two dots, the view and the model, and actually get it on screen, right? To be honest right now, and I didn't go into the depth of that level of research, I kind of forget the difference between the controller and the presenter. But I think one is more the presenter basically just renders it on screen and connects the dots and says, and makes sure the bindings are up and working. And generally, actually, that's one thing I haven't even mentioned, data binding.
Yeah.
Right. Because back in the day, it was always one way data binding. basically. Two-way, but quite, it wasn't easy. But
I think it was more, like you said earlier, about the event-driven. So you would have an event and you would respond to that event, and then you would update the view if you needed to, right?
Yeah.
So that's not really data binding. That's programmatic changes.
True. But so, again, I'd need to do the research of the difference between model view controller, model view presenter. I believe some of it is like that data flow.
Yeah.
Which one updates which? How does it get updated? But either way, I just remember back in the day that was really doing my brain in, trying to figure that shit out.
Yeah.
Then comes along model view, view model. Now, in my research here, I believe I see that's come from Martin Fowler.
Right.
But I still vividly remember there was another Microsoft MVP at the time called, his name was Josh Smith.
Right.
And he had this article and a demonstration in the MSDN magazine and MSDN website that really went in and introduced the MVVM model.
Yeah.
And how to have those that separation of concerns. And then that just really, that's where everything clicked for me.
Yeah.
Right. Now, this is made possible because of the two-way data mining that that WPF allows.
Yeah.
So when the view model implements the iNotify property change handler, which basically just raises an event that says, hey, something's changed and its property name was first name.
Yeah.
Right. Once we've done that, now we've got this idea that what you see on screen can be represented as data, right?
Yeah.
And then to me, that's really powerful because no longer do I need to update controls on screen or do I need to tweak things. I just need to think about things as just objects, right? As a .NET developer, as an object-oriented developer, that's quite natural.
Yeah.
Right? If I want to change any form of state, I just need to tweak a data value and it gets reflected in my view.
Mm-hmm.
That could be, and you know, I don't want to go into too much detail, but for argument's sake, and I know you're going to cringe over this one, but I could say background color, I could bind the color to the background color.
Yeah.
Right? Arguably, you wouldn't do that because, well, I mean, there might be circumstances where you want to, but it's not ideal. But yeah, I can update the background color.
There's a very common use case that we all use all the time now, that very thing, which is light and dark modes.
Light and dark mode, yes. But we're not tweaking. So this is why I said you were going to cringe, is you're changing that state. What mode are you in, light or dark? You're not saying set the background color to black, set the text to white.
Yeah.
And that's a very critical differentiation because that's a styling thing and that's how we present it, which again is something that WPF separates out.
Mm.
So this idea that MVVM allows us to treat the state of our application or our UI purely as data means we can manipulate it and tweak it and change it and critically test it quite easily.
Mm.
And because all it is just an object.
Yeah.
That raises an event when data changes.
Yeah.
Now, back to that light mode, dark mode side of things, what WPF also introduces is this concept of styles.
Yeah.
Right? Which is where now, like CSS, I can have a style that says if the state, well, I can have a style that says here's my light version and here's my dark version.
Yeah.
Then I can have a binding that says if display mode is dark, set the style to the dark style or set the style to light style.
Yeah. Right?
So we're not saying set it to black with white writing or white with black writing. We're saying apply these various different styles like you do with CSS.
So it's declarative instead of imperative.
Yeah, absolutely. And
gosh,
there's just so much to it, right? Because now if we jump back to when you were saying before too, well, okay, let's sort of to tie this off is how do we actually render or how do we define our interfaces? If we've got the state that we can do and manipulate that as an object, how do we actually make it look or how do we put on screen what we want to, like where are those text boxes going? Where are the buttons going?
Mm-hmm.
And where are things in that? And this is the kind of the question you were asking before with WinForms, like how is that? It is a WYSIWYG editor. With WPF, now that is all stored in an XML-based language called XAML.
Yeah.
Extensible Application Markup Language, I believe.
Yeah.
And to me, well, again, this is one critical thing there, and it's very similar to HTML.
Which is also an XML-based language.
An XML, like you've got the angle brackets, et cetera, et cetera. Open brackets, close bracket, or open tag, close tag. Now, part of the promise of WPF in the day was this separation of look and styling and behavior. and styling and data, that complete separation now, means in theory, I can give designers a suite of controls and they can style them up however they want, whilst my team of engineers and developers can build up the application.
And right? Would those designers have to learn XAML?
Technically, no.
Yeah.
The intention was no, they wouldn't. Microsoft have a tool called Blend, which I think I've opened it maybe once or twice in my life.
Yeah.
Now, it didn't, I don't think, and I've never heard of anyone having great success in that space, but the intention was there. And this goes back to my main workflow with WPF, and I just got into the habit, no matter, I don't even know how well Microsoft have updated it now, but I would never even look at the preview window because it just would never work.
Right. Okay.
Right. So I just got into the habit of doing all my screens and controls and everything just purely in XAML and laying them out in XAML using
a
grid system.
That when we edit this, and well, actually, I think you're editing this one.
Yep.
So if it was me at this point, I would splice in the audio clip from The Matrix when Cypher says to Neo, I don't even see code anymore. I just see blonde, brunette, redhead.
And that's pretty much it. Like that's how it would be. Like I'd see you do the columns and you do all your column sizing and everything else and stack panels, all the different panels and all the different layout tools. Now, I was just onto something there too.
Sorry. Oh, the preview window didn't work.
The reason why a lot of that didn't actually work in practice as well as it did in theory was because if I want to render something on screen, it needs to be meaningful. Because like we said, you're rendering some state on screen. And a lot of your data binding and a lot of your data context, the data context is set at runtime, not design time.
Yeah.
Right. So in later days, there were ways to get around that, but it was really hard. Now, there's a lot more overhead to make sure that you can get your preview window up and running ideally. And like I said, never really had great success in that. So we didn't invest too much time or effort down that space. So where are we at? MVVM, we've got two-way data binding. I can tweak the state of my UI based on updating just properties inside my view model, which is great. But how do we handle the events that are coming back from the UI? The button clicks, the hovers, the focus changing. There's, I guess, a couple of different ways to do that. And the main way is using commands. Right, so now we can start to Microsoft introduce commands. And so we can actually now have our view models react to the command handler. So when the command is fired, it raises an event that then we can then have that handled inside our view model.
And how is that different to an event?
Because the command triggers. So when we're talking about commanding here, you're binding to that command, but the trigger does not, there can be more than one trigger for that command. It could be a button. It could be a menu item. It could be a keyboard shortcut, right?
The command doesn't care.
Command doesn't care. You bind up your trigger and then the handler. So the command's just that thing in the middle.
Right. Whereas with events.
And you can enable and disable a command.
Right.
From one spot.
Yeah.
Right. So you get a bit more power.
The event args are strongly typed, right?
Yeah.
So you have to have a specific event handler.
Yeah. So.
And the commands are bindable properties.
Yes. I think that was a bit later. I'm just trying to think.
Sorry.
I honestly can't remember that fine detail. But there are just so many things. Like bindings, you're able to build in binding converters.
Yeah.
Right. So you can convert at binding time from a Boolean value to a text value. And again, later, they made that a lot more streamlined and a lot of that was handled just for free. But in the early days, right, you would need to handle back to colors, right? You'd have a binding converter that would go from a string color to a system.ui. Fuck, I can't remember.
System.drawing, isn't it?
System.drawing.colors, right? So you'd have a converter that would do these things. We had animations, which were pretty cool. I can't even remember the last time I did animation. I can't even remember exactly how we did those now.
Objects and timelines.
Keyframes, timelines. Yep. Everything had opacities too. Like, this is just shit that was not available beforehand. And some of the UI I've developed, like I mentioned the Xserve renderings or the network switch renderings. The other one too, which really did my head in, was a full custom control from ground up of a, I guess like a calendar view, but each cell could grow and shrink depending on the data that was being shown in it. And it went many columns wide, many columns deep, scrolling left, right, everywhere. And when the users put on too much data, it like the grid just slowed down. And finding optimizations, like that's where I learned about data virtualization and UI virtualization. So only pulling down from the server what was needed and maybe a little bit on either side, top and bottom, left and right, just to help with the smooth scrolling. Same with control virtualization. Like we don't need to render the whole grid if that's not in the viewport. And then that takes me down the whole path of what I really loved about WPF was its layout model.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever got into actual control creation, but because it was each control is a tree structure. So each view is a tree structure of controls, and controls can recursively host other controls, which can recursively host controls. It's actually a really cool model the way that they do it. So you start at the very top, and each control has a measure method.
Yeah.
Right. And basically it's the parent control saying, hey, how big do you want to be?
Yeah.
If you had infinite space, how much space do you want to take up?
Yeah.
And you just recursively go down the tree.
Yeah.
And each one would work out how much its children needed, therefore how much space does it need?
Yeah.
And it'll go all the way down. And then that would obviously go surface back to the top. And then the parent view says, hey, I need this much. Then the next step is to say, what was it? You measure, then you arrange. So the next step is arrange. So it's like, then that pass goes down and says, hey, I'm only going to give you 32 by 32 pixels. You arrange your children to fit into that space. And again, you recursively go down. And then they might, like each child might say, well, you're only allowed 24 pixels or whatever. And then it'd go back up, right? And so in this way, each control was owned its own space and its children's space, but you could grow and flex, but it gave you so much fidelity over what you need, how you put things on screen. Anyway, I really love getting into the depths of building custom controls like that.
Yeah.
We had, again, on another tool, we had similar tool. We had a radial context menu.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you've seen those.
I have, yeah.
Yep. We had a radial context menu because when you clicked one button, then that would go off to others. So we built one of them. Like, again, this kind of shit we couldn't do prior to WPF and everything I've mentioned now, separating control look and feel from behavior.
Yeah.
The animations, the transparencies, the curved borders and whatnot.
Yeah.
Right. None of this could have happened.
Yeah.
Now, we can't have a discussion about WPF without the elephant in the room.
Which one? Are we talking about how you might render WPF on the web?
Well, more like, kind of like a universal, framework to render on the web, to render similar applications in the web.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like back in the day, there was a competing framework called Flash.
Yeah. Yeah. Not quite the same thing, but yeah.
Not quite the same, but you know, back in the day, like Flash was everywhere for if you wanted a rich web into experience.
Yeah. So back in the day, like HTML and JavaScript were quite limited. I don't even know. When did CSS come out?
Great question. But CSS, I mean, that's gone through various different iterations.
Of course.
Too, right?
Yeah.
Original CSS, let's see what it says. CSS release date, 96.
Yeah.
Right. So CSS has been around, but in a very limited capacity, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And what you could do with it was, you know, is not what you can do with it now. Yeah. So I think.
Speaking of which, did you see that post I put up the other day where someone has come up and said that CSS is now Turing complete?
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they built a working x86 emulator inside CSS.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And does it run Doom?
It does. At something like one frame a second, but it does.
Yeah, that's cool. That's
and
really awesome.
It's insane. But anyway, that's a slight digression. It's come a long way since it was introduced in 96.
Yeah. So back in the day, we're talking probably, 2007? If you, back in the 2000s, really, if you wanted a rich web experience, you generally needed some kind of plugin like Flash, which was the dominant one at the time.
Yeah.
And then an Adobe Air.
Yep.
And Java, of course, Java applets.
Yep. And then Microsoft decided they wanted to release WPF everywhere.
Yeah.
WPF/E.
That's a catchy name, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's almost as catchy as Silverlight.
Yeah.
And now, to be honest, I never had the opportunity to really dig into Silverlight.
Mm.
The very limited goes I had with it, it was just, to me, it was too limited. Like a lot of things that I loved from WPF, you just couldn't really get done properly in Silverlight. And honestly, I can't remember what they were. I just remember being frustrated. I'm like, I'm unrestricted on the desktop and now I'm in the web and it's just very restrictive.
Funny how the turns have tabled, but yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And like there's been a lot said about Silverlight.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of careers were bet on Silverlight being the next big thing.
Right.
And, you know, Microsoft have copped a lot of flack by telling people to, bet the house on Silverlight. And then in, what was it? 2011. So 2007, they're talking about Silverlight coming out.
Yeah.
And then they pulled the plug in 2011, end of 2011. So
yeah.
4 years. Right.
Yeah.
And they, you know, leading up to that, Microsoft are really telling people like Silverlight is the way to go. This is where mm-hmm. We're putting everything against it. You guys need to move towards Silverlight. It's all, that's the future. And I think they copped a lot of flack for pulling Silverlight. Like a lot of people.
So, yeah.
A lot of people really followed them down that path.
But so you often hear this, like, you know, it's a common phrase to hear someone say, whenever you talk about a Microsoft technology, if it's new, to hear someone say, what if they Silverlight it?
Yeah. Like, what if they tell you to put all your eggs in that basket and then they pull the rug out from under you?
Yeah. So go on.
It wasn't really Microsoft's doing to pull that rug.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's well documented, but there's a famous letter from Steve Jobs, a famous email from Steve Jobs in 2010 titled Thoughts on Flash.
Yeah.
Right. And when, as everyone knows, Apple are a very closed system. They like things happening their way. They want to guarantee that if something's meant to run in their browser, it's going to look exactly how it should look, how they want it to look.
Yeah.
Right. And they lose that control once you have Flash or any other plugin taking over that rendering.
Yeah.
And so in that email, basically, Steve Jobs says, hey, we're not going to allow any more Flash or any more browser plugins on our platforms, in our browsers. And at the time, too, they only allowed Safari on their devices.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So there was absolutely no alternative. And absolutely at that point, you know, iPhones, I don't know if iPads were out then, but like iOS was really taking over the computing platforms.
Yeah.
Right. And once Apple say you can't do any more plugins in our browsers,
well,
people are not going to want to build those. Like, there's not going to be that ecosystem.
It's not anymore. I mean, it was never, they just never introduced it.
Yes. Sorry, never allow. Yes. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. You're right. But if they're going to shut that down before it's even started, right, no one's going to want to build it. So why would, this is a time when everyone was moving towards mobile.
Yeah.
This was a time when people were moving away from the desktop into the web.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't really blame Microsoft for saying, okay, well, you know, things have changed in the 3 years since them starting Silverlight. Things changed out of their control.
Yeah.
They could not control that. So, you know, on one hand, I really don't blame them for saying, okay, we can't. Like, there's not a future. There's no point in spending that money and effort maintaining that framework.
Yeah.
But around the same time, too, HTML was getting richer. Right. And that was part of Jobs's argument too, is like HTML is getting a lot better at doing a lot of the standard things. You don't need Flash anymore to do what, you know, to do a good looking website. You don't need Flash anymore. HTML can do it for you now.
Right.
You put those things together. I think the writing was clearly on the wall that Silverlight was not going to be around for much longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, with the death of Silverlight, people started asking questions about, well, what's the future hold for WPF?
Yeah.
You know, rightly so. People are starting to get concerned. And interestingly, where are we? We're around 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
Silverlight's gone. I'm just trying to do the maths in my head into where I was in my illustrious career. I think that was about the time that I started moving away from WPF too. Through the fault of me getting scared that they were going to pull the rug on WPF, but things just changed in my life and I moved on from that one main application I was building, which was massively WPF heavy, still in use today. I know that for a fact.
Mm.
And at that point in time, I'd have to, just doing a quick check here. At that point in time, oh, wow. Okay. A lot earlier than I was expecting. I started to look at, well, around that time, I was introduced to Google Sheets.
Right. Okay.
Right. And I've just looked now. That's 2006. My Google Sheets were released. Yeah. I thought it was a lot later, but I guess I never really had any need to play with Google Sheets, but it must have been around 11, 12. Yeah. Maybe 2010, 2011, thereabouts. And I vividly remember looking at that going, I bet my career on the desktop, because you can get super rich applications on the desktop. I've done some pretty cool shit. That's where I invested all my effort and my time. I look at Google Sheets. I'm like, hang on. In my head, spreadsheets were like, there's no way you could do a spreadsheet not on a desktop.
Yeah.
Like, they're too complicated. There's just too much going on. It has to be done on a desktop. I saw Google Sheets and basically just picked everything up, threw it out and said, desktop's dead, right?
Right.
I cannot see any future desktop applications in my career because the web is now becoming so rich.
Yeah.
Just natively. And that's not Silverlight. That's not Flash. Like, that is native JavaScript. jQuery JavaScript is just becoming so powerful that what would traditionally be thought of as purely desktop application is now happening in a browser.
Yeah.
And for me, that was pretty much the end of my official WPF career. And that was around the time too where I think Microsoft has started to say, okay, look, we're not going to actively push WPF as much as they were.
Well, there's something else that happened around that same time that's probably relevant, but I'll come back to it.
I'm just looking through my notes. Are you talking now about, you're not talking about Xamarin now, are you?
Not yet, no. Pre-Xamarin at Microsoft. So you said you're talking about 2012.
Windows Phone.
So Windows Phone, Windows 8, right?
Yep.
So that comes out, and that's when it was also XAML-based, but they're pushing WinRT, which is very much, you know, basically very similar to WPF, but essentially different. And then out of that evolves eventually what becomes WinUI, right?
Sorry? UWP
is what I'm thinking of. Yeah, not WinRT, UWP. UWP, right?
Yep.
And then UWP goes away and out comes WinUI.
Yep. But WPF's still not dead.
Absolutely, yeah.
WinForms is still not dead.
Yep.
Right. You can still build a WinForms app out there. But moving on past WPF to, like you said, UWP, WinUI, MAUI, right? These are all tools that leverage XAML.
Yeah.
These are still tools that are using the philosophy coming from WPF, separating behavior and styling.
Yeah, they share a significant percentage of their DNA with WPF.
Absolutely. And so
interesting that you say that, because what was that code name again?
Avalon.
Yeah.
Avalonia.
Yeah. It's got me wondering whether that's the inspiration, that's a connection there.
I'd put money on it. I reckon there would be.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up. But yes, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
Yeah.
Interesting bit of history there.
Yeah. And I don't know. Like, I'm of the firm belief that without WPF, like, Windows would look like Windows 95.
Yeah.
Or around or the Windows XP sort of
Fisher-Price.
That's the word, Fisher-Price style, right?
Yeah.
And everything would look the same, and all the apps, I mean, right now, like, the apps start to look the same now anyway, but that's because everyone's got very similar styling.
Well, that's because everyone's using the same models trained on the same styling logic.
Yeah, absolutely. But there is absolutely no way. And actually, interestingly, like, Visual Studio was traditionally a WinForms app.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. There was one version. I can't even remember what version it was now. That they was a big thing, that they completely rewrote that in WPF2.
Yeah.
I can't remember what version.
I feel like it was 2012. But potentially.
Took them a while, but yeah.
Because didn't it coincide when they launched Visual Studio Community? Or am I misremembering?
Oh, I can't confirm nor deny. But
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that's where I'm at, right?
Yeah.
Why, like, we've spoken about, we both really love the framework, and, you know, I think for me, it's two parts. One is the technology that it brought to the table. Like I said, the concept of separating behavior and look, the data templates, data bindings, control templates, styles, all of that was like, it gave me tools that were not available in WinForms and were not available on the Mac competing operating system, right?
Yeah.
Which that's what I love. But two, I think a lot of that love also comes from some of the shit that I was luckily that I was able to do, right? I had a boss that was like, yeah, okay, you can play with this beta version before it's been released, you know, to one of the biggest projects I worked on where it was like, let's go out and build out these fancy UIs controls from the ground up that are fully optimized and do everything to the, you know, to the fine detail that I need it to do while being smooth, scrolling works, fetches data when it's needed, doesn't do more than it needs to. It measures and like to just really get all the way into the depths. Like I've got really fond memories of that. I think once I put it all together, like that's why I think like it's, yeah, it's just a technology that I really, really enjoy working in. I just, I do. I have, hard to say, but yeah, I've got a love for it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things.
Yeah. Very cool. I'm very cool that it's still around.
It is. And well, you know, like Microsoft makes an effort of making things backwards compatible.
Yeah.
Right. So it'll be around for a while.
Like you said, WinForms is still here and it's not going anywhere. And can I just say, I actually really like WinForms as well. I think, yes, it's limited and yes, you can't do things with it, but there's something about the simplicity and there's something about the constraints of no overlapping pixels and everything else that you said that I think actually makes it really great. And I think for some very simple use cases where you're forcing yourself to keep it simple, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I get it. And if I think about that, right, to get everything that makes WPF as powerful as it is, there is a lot of boilerplate to get to that point.
Yeah.
Like, to get your controls set up, to get your style set up, to get your data binding set up. And, you know, these days it's easier, but like back in the day, yes, it was implementing iNotify property change. Back in the day when you had to hand write all of your property getters and setters, and you had to make sure that you would call iNotify property change, but only when it changed. Like, yes, there was a lot of boilerplate work around it to get to that point.
Yeah,
absolutely. But it also meant that you got to do some pretty cool shit.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. I mean, that's such a great history of a great product. And I'm surprised you don't have any little WPF side projects on the go.
No, because like I said, a lot of that space can be now done in the browser.
Yeah.
Right? But a lot of my learnings from that time I've taken into browser-based applications, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, you did mention a lot of design patterns, concepts, you know, engineering disciplines that you learned through cutting your teeth on WPF.
Yeah, 100%. Actually, speaking of side projects, growing up, did you ever play the Test Match game?
No.
It's Crown and Andrews. It's like I'm not going to call it a board game. It's like a tabletop game. You got the cricket players and then batsmen and you can bowl the ball. No?
No.
It's a lot of Australian kids, a lot of Australian boys would have had that growing up.
I didn't grow up in Australia.
Yeah, I know. But you're still a Pom and they play cricket over there.
That's true. Yeah.
But my son's playing it now. Like he's cricket obsessed and the Bangladesh test started yesterday. So, you know, he's wanting to play, you know, all cricket paraphernalia comes out. Anyway, have you ever seen a cricket score sheet? I'll show you from the game. Don't know if you like.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And every time there's a ball going, you're marking about 3 or 4 different places, depends on what happens. And there's all that shit. So as a side project, I'm like, bugger this. And I got Claude to just spin me up a cricket scoreboard.
Yeah.
So now on the TV, we can just render up like a traditional cricket scoreboard.
Yeah.
And I've got it doing like an SVG graphic for the nostalgic shape of the board and everything and all that. And there's a clock in the middle. The clock actually tracks the time. Like an analog clock that tracks the time.
Yeah.
And then on my laptop, there's the scorecard that you actually fill in.
Yeah.
But it's done so simply where there's like a button, like it's made for ease of use so that there's no, like you can't accidentally score the wrong thing. So there's just buttons, you know, was it a 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 runs? Was it a wicket and all of that? And it just, yeah, it's pretty cool. So now rather than me having to score it using the scorecard, which can be quite time consuming. And if you forget one step, then the scores are all out and it's just a nightmare. Now it's all completely tracked.
Yeah.
Nice. And it's on the screen, on the TV screen. So it's kind of like you're at the game.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. But at the moment, it just runs locally. I'm thinking I'll maybe try and spin it up so that you can just have an endpoint and anyone can spin up their own game and just put it on the TV, score it on the phone and put it on TV.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah. But that's not a desktop app and it won't
Speaking of desktop apps and things where you control it on your phone and put it up on the TV.
Yeah.
You look confused.
I'm trying to work out where you're going with that.
Bubbles. Remember Bubbles?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
Bubbles wants another outing.
Yeah.
Okay. I can get on board with that.
Yeah. So if you're not busy on the 25th, if you can make it, Liam, if it's not too short notice, and if anyone else can make it, it's online. So you don't have to show up anywhere. You can register on meetup.com and it's the Sydney alt.net meetup.
It is online.
Yeah, it's online. And Bubbles has been invited to make an appearance.
Interesting. What's the topic?
I've invited Toby as well.
What's the topic?
The topic is they want to hear about Bubbles. They want to hear about our experience building and presenting with an AI panelist.
Okay, sweet. Sounds good.
That's a desktop app and a mobile app and all talking to each other.
Yeah. And actually, one little complete tie-in that didn't really get to do, but and I kind of thought in there at the very end is something that you're quite passionate about now, mobile development.
Mm.
And Maui, which itself, again, uses XAML.
Yeah.
And am I correct in thinking it's come from the same lineage of UI frameworks as WPF?
Yeah. Well, yes and no. Yeah. So Xamarin interestingly, my first introduction to mobile development was Windows Phone, which was XAML. And that was before I did any Android or iOS, because I already knew .NET. And I was like, this is great. I can make mobile apps. And I did. I made some mobile apps.
Yep.
Nothing too fancy. But I actually learned that before. And then I learned Xamarin Forms before I learned really any kind of deeper Android or iOS. And what happened with Maui, so before Maui, it was Xamarin Forms. And the folks, we had a conversation with Brandon Minnick about this, if you recall. So the folks that created it, it started off as MonoTouch, which was .NET running on iOS. And then there was MonoDroid, which was .NET running on Android. And they became Xamarin. So it was Xamarin.Android, Xamarin.iOS. And they made a decision to create Xamarin Forms, which was a cross-platform XAML UI, which was a layer on top of and spread across both of those, which came later. And that was when I got into Xamarin, you know, at that stage. And then Xamarin became Maui, which is what Bubbles is made of.
Yeah. And funnily enough, because when I was thinking about this episode, I'm like, I was actually going to bring up the community stand-up that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
The Maui community stand-up. But that, from memory, was a reflection on Maui UI in July.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
That you are the curator of?
Yes.
Yeah. How'd that go? I was going to use that as my segue, and then you just gave me a better one.
Oh, okay. I see. Yeah. So I think we were speaking about that community stand-up before we hit record, actually.
Was that before hit record? So this is why you're going to hit record straight away, even if there's shit that we don't want to have published.
Yeah. So yeah, Maui UI July was great this year. Really, really good. I mean, it was kind of, I had a really busy July this year. And I had a whole bunch of content that I wanted to do and I didn't get around to it. I'll be honest, it's not easy. I mean, it's not hard, but it's a lot of running around trying to remind people that it's Maui UI July and then getting them to commit and do it and then chasing them up for their content and so on and so forth. So I think the calendar was a little bit more sparse than I would have liked, this year.
Yep.
But with that said, there was some just absolutely top-notch content. Some of the contributors really shared some amazing stuff. And, you know, we don't need to rehash it this episode. We can put a link to the calendar and we can put a link to the live stream if anyone's interested as well in the show notes. One thing I will say, though, is this year was the fourth year. Was it? Let's see. So we had, no, fifth. So we had, this is the fifth year. And just thinking back to the very first year of Maui UI July, and looking at the entry on the 30th of July, 2022. There's a really interesting blog post here titled .NET MAUI Community Toolkit.
Oh, yeah. Who wrote that one?
That was written by one Mr. Liam Elliott.
Oh, yeah.
And believe it or not, there is, of course, a mention of WPF in this blog post.
Of course. Because, and this was actually, funnily enough, right, it's the same thing with MAUI, and WPF had the same thing, is when they released it, they didn't release it with every single control that most applications use.
Mm.
And like the one of the biggest ones with WPF was, especially for an enterprise framework, was there was no data grid.
Yeah.
And if there's no data grid, like how do you render data in a grid?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's a very good question. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like you could build out your grids and do it manually, but there was no easy way to just say, here are the columns and here's the data that needs to be shown in there. And here are the templates for each cell. So there was the WPF community toolkit that introduced the data grid amongst a few other controls. But the one I vividly remember is the data grid.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting because there's now it's what's called the Windows community toolkit.
Yep.
And it's like now we have, there's obviously there's the MAUI community toolkit. There's the MVVM community toolkit. And there's, you know, community toolkits everywhere. But this was the OG.
Yeah. And if you also think about it this way too, this was in the time pre.NET being open source.
Yes. Was it?
Yep.
But, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
This was like .NET 4 or .NET 4.5.
WPF.
WPF community toolkit.
Yeah. The community toolkit. Okay. Right. Yeah. That was what I was wondering. Yeah.
So this was now an open source control library that you could use inside the WPF application, any WPF application.
Mm.
So like it's easier now to have being open source. It is easier for the community contributions to be able to start to work on these things and help these things come to fruition inside the framework. But that didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
So the community took it upon themselves to build this toolkit on the side that was open source that could actually build those controls that were missing.
Yeah.
Wow. So that was what, 5 years ago you said? 22.
5 years ago, yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. So MAUI UI July has been going for a few years now. Started off as a Xamarin UI July thing by Stephen Thewerson. I actually asked him to, you know, do it again for MAUI and he couldn't. He was too busy. And he suggested that I do it. So, and that's how it started.
There you go. Flying the flag.
Yes. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you were trying to make a pun then, because my first entry for this year's MAUI UI July was Flagstone UI.
Oh, no. 22. So when did MAUI come out?
MAUI came out in 2022, because it was .NET 6, wasn't it?
Oh, I can't remember. So MAUI 22.
Let me just check, because it may be .NET 6. So it came out officially with .NET 6, which was, I'll tell you exactly. So .NET 6 was 2021.
So it came out in 21?
Yeah.
And we're in 26 now?
Yeah.
Would you be surprised to know that means that MAUI is about as old as Silverlight was when it was killed off?
I feel like it's actually outlived Silverlight.
Yeah. Well, 07, so September 07 to December 11.
Yeah. So that's 8, 9, 10, 11. That's 4 years. So MAUI is 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. That's 5.
Yeah.
We're already a year ahead. And also it's on LTS, which means that it's in November, we're getting a new LTS release, which gives us at least another 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's long outlived Silverlight.
Yeah. So
except Silverlight is actually alive and kicking. I sent you a link in the chat. I don't know if you've seen this, but
I haven't looked at Silver. It, but I saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess the only reason I raise that is like, if there's anyone out there sort of saying, yeah, but what happens if Microsoft pulls that rug? Like, it's already got the longevity that Silverlight never had.
Yeah. Because like, I think this is the thing. It's like people forget so easily. And it's such an important point you raise, is like Microsoft didn't pull the rug on Silverlight. Browsers just killed plugins.
Yeah.
The plugin ecosystem just went away.
Yep.
And that's it. It's gone.
That's it.
Yeah. Of course, we have WebAssembly now.
Which kind of, yeah, lets you do anything.
Yes.
Most things. Almost anything.
Pretty much anything. Because there's not just WASM in the browser, right? There's also WASI, which is the WebAssembly systems interface, which lets you run WebAssembly on a machine. It's like, anyway, it's a whole other discussion. But it's like basically almost like container runtimes. It's a virtual machine, essentially.
Yeah. But yeah, times are different though.
Yeah.
Times are really different. Like the notes I've got here, if you go back to Steve Jobs's email about Flash, or the issues he cites are battery performance,
yeah,
browser crashing, poor touch for performance, security, like things that obviously make his devices look bad.
Yeah.
But the technology's come so far now where a lot of those issues are probably not as significant now as they were back then either.
Yeah.
Like mobile phone batteries themselves have come a long way.
Well, what were we saying on the last episode about developers have outsourced efficiency to hardware?
Exactly. And that's my point, right? Like there's more memory, they are faster, they've got bigger batteries. So like those issues.
The touch experience is up to the developer and designer more than the technology.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that like that argument probably doesn't hold today, but it's been killed.
Yeah.
And look, I'm not saying it was right or wrong to kill them. It probably was the right thing to do. Like we don't need that endless number of plugins in our browsers.
No, indeed. Depending on
which website you're navigating to. Is it a Flash website? Is it a Silverlight website?
Yeah.
Right. But just interesting. Like it was just a sign of the times more than anything.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I agree. Yeah, it was definitely the right decision at the time.
Sweet. So I hope that I've convinced everyone that WPF is, well, I think it's underrated.
Yeah.
And underappreciated technology.
Even by you, because you don't use it anymore.
I've still got love for it. I just don't use it.
Yeah.
If I had a need, like if I was doing a desktop application, absolutely it would be.
Yeah.
But I just don't have a need for desktop apps anymore.
Yeah.
And like I said, like a lot of the stuff that I was doing, be it full control customization, like there's not a lot of need for that these days.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Well, either way, it's not going anywhere. So there's still time for your next desktop project.
Yep, exactly. Don't know what that'll be.
Maybe we could have a little toolbar tray icon on our desktops while we're doing these recordings that lets us know when they're ringing the bell for last orders.
I'll get Claude to do that for us.
Yeah, Claude can do that for sure.
And no, my son's name is not Claude. So, Matt, I think that's it, this episode of the Beer Driven Devs. I'm Liam Elliott.
I'm Matt Goldman.
Cheers.
Cheers.
The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.
Yeah, there was stuff that I don't even want on a Teams recording from today, but
that's the way life goes.